Tech Talk with Jeff Quattromani.
Jeff Quattromani joins me this afternoon. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm well, and you?
Good, thanks, mate. When I was promoting the fact that we were going to be talking to you today, I said that you were the first item on your agenda is a brand new robot vacuum cleaner. You say it's on sale this week, and it cleans your floors and itself. On sale? It's not on sale. It's $2,500.
I should say it's now for sale, yeah. Not necessarily on sale. It's definitely not a bargain if you look at the price figure there at $2,500. But this is, I don't even know if we can call them robot vacuums anymore because it does so much more than that these days. This is, you know, from Ecovacs, who we've spoken about before, their latest model called the X1, which will vacuum and mop. But then when it goes back to the station, it will clean out the dirty water from its mopping and refill with clean water. And will also empty its dust bag from its vacuuming as well, and then effectively goes back out and finishes the job if it hasn't already. So it's it really is self-sufficient now.
So for those that are interested, the difference between this and the previous model is, on the previous model, if you want to mop the floors, you physically have to take out a particular section and replace it with the mopping section. This one, you don't have to. It's all there all the time, is it?
Correct. And the other new element to this as well is the mopping pads are now circular, which actually spin instead of scrub like the old model used to. And the actual mopping pads also get cleaned as well as part of this process. So the mopping pad stays a little bit clean and fresh, ready to go.
Do you think it's worth the money?
Look, I've got one here and I've been testing it for a little over a month. Look, if you can afford it, you wouldn't bat an eyelid at something like this. It does a pretty good job. I think the ones that we've spoken about before, like the T8, are remarkable as well at probably half the price, which are still fantastic robots. But this is that sort of one which you just don't have to touch again for at least a month.
Okay, $2,500's a lot of money, and a lot of people wouldn't even consider spending that. You've done a lot of reviews on robot vacuum cleaners. What's a reasonably priced robot vacuum cleaner that people listening to us this afternoon may be able to afford to go out and buy, and it will do the job for them?
Look, I think if you want to do vacuuming and mopping, then you're looking at around $1,100 for a very good model that will empty itself, but it will have the mopping attachment as well. If you don't care about mopping, then you should be spending less than $600, $700 at best. You'll still get the same level of navigation as all of them. It's more about how well it can clean your floors.
Okay. If you go and spend your $500 or $600 on a robot vacuum cleaner, will it clean your house so that you won't have to vacuum the house? You may have to mop the house, but considering that a lot of homes have carpet, will it clean the house so that you just simply can put the vacuum cleaner away?
Look, I think it depends on how much of a clean freak you can be, but I know that in our household, we will use the robot Monday to Friday, but on weekends, you still do that once, you know, in the corners, making sure you get into the carpets a little bit deeper. The reality is these robots don't suck as hard as proper, you know, vacuums that follow you and roll around on a hose. So it is a different level of suction, but that, you know, everyday cleaning, it can now be done with a robot, definitely.
I suppose, speaking about level of suction, the rechargeable Dyson that you don't have to worry about, you know, cords and things like that, they are very effective, but they don't suck as well as the ones you would normally have with the hose and the plug in the PowerPoint, the old style vacuum cleaner I'm talking about.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we have a handheld stick vac from Dyson as well, and I love that because it does have about 10 times the suction of the robot vacuums, which is significant. But then again, if you wanted to get even better, those ones that are on wheels that roll around behind you, they take it another level.
Isn't it funny? I mean, I know you're into having the robot lawnmower, and it works a treat if you've got the right size lawn and the right style lawn. I wonder what is next that's going to become robotic that will help us in our daily lives, in our homes?
Well, look, if I have to predict, it will be emptying the dishwasher. We saw a prototype from Samsung about a year ago, which looks like a robot with a big arm, and it can lift open your dishwasher, carefully take out plates, wine glasses, and put them back into the cupboards. So that would be my dream, because emptying the dishwasher is a chore no one wants to do.
But what if the dishwasher's not near where the cupboards are for the plates or the glasses? You've still got to do it yourself, haven't you?
It would have wheels that it can drive around on.
Oh,
so it'd
okay.
be almost like a robot on wheels, but with an arm
right.
that it can actually open the dishwasher, pick it up, drive it to the next section, and place it where it needs to go. I mean, it's been tested. It's happening.
Mate, that's lazy, isn't it?
Well, look, we probably thought a dishwasher was once
yeah,
lazy
true,
when they were first
true.
Announced. People said, look, it only takes me 10 minutes to wash the dishes by hand. Why would I need a dishwasher? Same concept.
Do you know where you need one in staff kitchens?
Oh, yes, because no one wants to touch those.
That's what you need. You need a robot to actually stack the dishwasher, clean the kitchen, and then put everything away for you in staff
that.
Kitchens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, with May fast approaching, it's only, what, a week away, so too is the Optus 3G network shutdown. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, look, if you've got an old smartphone or even an old basic phone, you need to be checking in if you're an Optus customer to make sure your phone will continue to work beyond May. If your phone does not support 4G or even the newer versions of the 3G network, you could be in trouble. So anyone who's got, say, a Samsung Galaxy S2 or a BlackBerry, a Nokia N95, there's a number of phones in a list that I'm looking at from Optus, and those phones will effectively stop working throughout May once the 3G networks are turned off in those areas.
What if you live in those areas and you have a 4G phone, but you know the 4G is not very strong, so invariably the phone clicks over to 3G? What do you do in that situation? I'm thinking about country areas, for example.
No, it's an important question. So there are multiple bands within a 3G network. So if you think about lanes on a road, if a highway is the 3G highway, they're effectively shutting down one of those lanes. Some phones can only operate in that lane, so that's where they bump into the problem. So the 3G network will still exist for now, but there's an element of the Optus 3G network that's being shut off. So there will still be an Optus 3G network, but not all phones will support it. So anyone who's got a phone around that 8 to 10 year mark is the ones in question.
And this is just if you're in the Optus network, is that right?
Correct. If you're a Telstra or Vodafone customer, there is no impact at this stage. But we will start to see this happen over time, you know, as more 5G networks are created. As a result, bandwidth needs to come from somewhere, and 3G will be the one that gets chopped.
Okay. Samsung's got two new monitors out. I've seen them. They look pretty nice. They are going to double as a smart TV. They'll feature a built-in webcam and remote control. And look, for large monitors, if you compare that with, the new Apple monitor that's come out, I mean, they're half the price, even less.
Yeah, and I always look at this monitor/TV as a good solution for those who perhaps have, you know, a child who in their bedroom, they want somewhere where they can do their schoolwork, but they also want to be able to watch TV. This is a monitor that can do both. So, you know, it's sitting at 32 inches, so it's a big screen. It does 4K, and it's got a remote control to use all the smart TV apps and things like that. But when you plug it into your computer, it's a perfect monitor as well. So it's that good way of saying, I've got a screen that's going to be good for study as well as entertainment when I need to.
If you're in the Apple world, if you've got a MacBook or something like that, will this work with a MacBook?
It can, yeah. So you can easily plug it into a MacBook, or you can actually even AirPlay to it as well. So if you've got an iPhone and you want to mirror content onto this, like you would a normal smart TV, you can still do that as well. So it's quite nicely tied into Apple's ecosystem.
If you have a MacBook and you take the, is it a USB Type-C lead or whatever they call it?
Yes.
If you put one into the MacBook and one into the screen, will it charge the MacBook?
No, it won't charge the MacBook. I think it will actually charge a PC, but I think the Mac, you'll still need to plug in your normal, Mac charger,
okay.
And it will just use the USB-C for the display output.
Okay, the Ultimate Road Trip Companion's been released with tyre inflation, jumpstart and phone charging capabilities. Tell us more.
Look, I really like this idea. This is a company called Mophie who usually make portable power banks for phones. But they've now expanded that power bank with a bigger battery, but it now has the capabilities to attach jumper leads to it so you could use it to jumpstart a car. And there's also a flashlight built in and an air compressor, mind you, a very small air compressor, that could perhaps save you in a pinch. It's really smart, I think, from a company like this.
How much does it cost?
You're looking at $270 for it. So it is that kind of device that, you know, it sounds expensive up front, but when you actually need it, it certainly pays off. So, you know, something like that, if you can keep it in the car, charge your smartphone in a pickle, but also help you out if the car breaks down, it could be a saver.
We talked briefly about Apple devices. There's an update to Apple devices. It's going to warn kids about explicit images they are sharing. Tell us more, please.
Yeah, this is interesting. If you've got a child who is using an iPhone and they're set up as a child using their iPhone, then they will start to see different messages pop up on their screen if they are sending or receiving images that the phone is deeming as sensitive. So, you know, if you think about nude pictures, for example, if they're receiving one, it will actually appear blurred out when they receive it on their phone with a warning to say that they think it's sensitive, and if you really would like to view it, you need to choose to do so, but the parents will get a notification of this. So it really is trying to keep the kids thinking about, should I be doing what I'm doing here, before they go ahead and take that next step. And it's also for sending as well.
Gee, it's a different world that I grew up in and you probably grew up in. I mean, I know you're younger than I am, but gee whiz, sending nude pictures, you know, to boyfriends and girlfriends when you're at school. Sadly, yeah, for mums and dads these days, that actually is a part of life.
It's a very common occurrence. And I've seen some companies which have smartphones for kids now that don't even have cameras on them, just to try and prevent that kind of activity from happening. It is a real problem. It's just too easy to do it these days. That's the problem.
All right, Jeff, our time always goes quick with you when we talk tech. Thank you so much for sharing some time with us. We appreciate it in your busy schedule. And we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. That's Jeff Cotramani.